are listening to the Forza Podcast with your host, Marsh.
What up, what up, what up, Canes fans? It is the Forza Podcast. It is Thursday, March 18th. We just finished up day three of spring practice for the Canes. We actually have football going on right now. I'm tired as hell. I'm ready for this week to be over so I can just sit back and do nothing but watch March Madness. As always, I am joined by my wonderful producer and co-host, Jordan Nelson. Jordan, how's your week going?
Crappy. But you know what? I love talking Canes football, so.
I notice you've been quiet on Twitter.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Life's gotten very busy for me over the last few months, and so, you know, I'm trying to be more responsible with my Twitter usage, you know? Like, as much as I love chopping it up with everyone, like, you got to pay the bills first, right? So.
You know, yesterday it hit me that I hadn't blogged about the Canes for like 2 weeks. So the last 2 days I've been pretty active on Twitter and just kind of getting caught up in recruiting and kind of getting like fans' opinions. It's good to like drop in every now and again, but like doing it consistently every day
is hard.
It's crazy. It's just like a big hangout session that nobody ever leaves.
No, dude. You know, like the energy that people have in doing this is impressive. Like, I mean, you've done it a lot longer than I have, and it's impressive, man. I don't know. I guess I'm starting to feel like a little bit burned out from all the Twitter stuff, and I guess everything, all the responsibilities that you know are going on. But I'm still loving doing everything and trying to do the best that I can, you know?
Aw, that was so precious. So great. It helps having, like, some sort of football. I know that the shitty thing about spring football is that, yes, it's football, but then you're like, oh, it's March. We still have 6 months until the start of the regular season.
Yeah.
I get excited about spring, but then I'm like, ugh. Like I think it's very important to control your emotions, which I don't do very well because I just get really excited. Like the other day, I was just spewing off lies, saying maybe 9-3.
Yeah.
Saying Keyshawn Smith is the real deal, but we got a lot to talk about, man. But tonight we are not alone. We are going to bring on our good friend. Do you want to give him a call?
Yeah, let me patch him in real quick. What's up, Brad?
Yo, what's going on, fellas?
Brad, what's going on, man? How you been?
Doing all right, man. How about y'all?
Not doing too bad, man. Not doing too bad. It's been a long week, long as hell. But, we now welcome on our old and good friend, Brad Tejada from Canes Insight. The man knows everything that there is to know about the Hurricanes. How you been, man? How's you excited that spring football's back?
Man, I can't honestly tell you how excited I am for this, man. We obviously have been waiting a little while, you know, with this past year that's gone on with COVID and whatnot. Seemed like the season was a little short for us, right? You know, not having a full off season, De'Aaron King getting hurt at the end of the year. We had some bright moments, obviously had some down moments in that North Carolina game and obviously the bowl game, but, it's a new year, new season. Hopefully we start to get a little bit more fans in the stands once football season comes around, get some tailgating, hopefully I get to hang out with you fellas and a few other fans. But yeah, man, I'm excited. And spring football's here, man. Day three of practice just ended, and we finally got some shells on.
Absolutely. So, and today they announced that the spring game will be April 17th. Is that right?
Yes, sir, at 11 a.m. on ACC Network.
Why? Yeah, that was shocking. I did not see a television spot coming, but there's going to be no fans, which kind of sucks. But we're all, you know, hoping that Hard Rock is filled to capacity in September. So, Brad, let me start with you, then I'll ask Jordan. What are just some quick takeaways from the first 3 days of spring practice? Obviously, we've been able to talk to the players and coaches three times you know, after practice, and we get a little, we get a few tidbits, things like that. Obviously, it's not the same as being at Green Tree and watching practice for yourself, but what are some things that you've noticed and what's caught your eye?
I mean, for the most part, to be honest with you, I think the word that's going to come up a lot throughout this, you know, podcast today is going to be competition. And I think that's where it all starts. I think that's where we need to get back to our roots. When the Miami Hurricanes was at its best, Green Tree was obviously the hardest competition we faced each and every day, where then Saturdays came a lot easier, right? And I think that's where we need to get back to. Obviously, first game of the season coming up is against Alabama. So, I mean, anything we see on Green Tree, we're going to obviously see something a lot tougher first week. So we're going to have to get prepared as quick as possible. But I think with having a full offseason, having your core of your offense back, not only your players that you're bringing back, but obviously the staff as well. And then that defense is, you know, getting a little bit of remake, right? You still got Manny Diaz as your defensive coordinator. So you're hoping that the aggressive style defense will be coming back. You add, you know, Jess Simpson, who was once here. And once he was here, you know, we saw that aggressive defensive line that we desperately needed the past couple of years, specifically in the trenches between those defensive tackles. And that kind of helps with the linebackers. I know that is one position group. I know Jordan and I, and I mean, most Hurricane fans have kind of harped on for the past 3, 4, 5 years, even when Manny Diaz was just a defensive coordinator here, recruiting linebackers. That's just a position we've never really been able to recruit and never been able to develop. But I will say this, when you look at Manny Diaz's defense and when you look at aggressive style defenses, don't get me wrong, I think a coach, you know, a high quality guy coach like a T Will would have made a big difference. But if there's one position group that I wouldn't be too worried about as far as the developmental side, it is the linebackers. Because you got to think, man, our gap control starts with the defensive line. Jess Simpson and Manny Diaz brought it up over the week that the defensive line, specifically the defensive tackles, if they're able to create that pressure to where those holes and gaps open up, it makes it a lot easier for our linebackers to identify where they need to go.
Well, I mean, that you said it, that we don't have to say anything. We could just end the episode right now. That was everything. I think that's you said it perfectly. The linebackers, I don't know about the linebackers. I do want to talk to you later on in the episode about the offensive line, because I think that's a unit that not enough people are talking about, whether it's a strength or still a weakness. But Jordan, what were some of your takeaways just looking at social media and hearing things for the first week of spring ball?
Yeah, well, I guess my timeline has been overcrowded with tweets about Tyler Van Dyke and Keyshawn Smith. And both of those things are very good. But, you know, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't mention the overwhelming amount of information coming out about those guys. You know, everything that's come out about TVD has seemed really positive so far. One of the highlights for me was seeing that Don Chaney, you know, was like, make no mistake, Tyler Van Dyke can run the football if he has to. You know, so it sounds like he's a good athlete. Sounds like he's, you know, kind of controlling where the football goes and is very accurate with his passing, which is nice. And then with Keyshawn Smith, man, we really need a wide receiver to step up this year. You know, I think most of us feel fairly secure with Mike Hartley. I think we all have high expectations for Charleston Rambo, and rightfully so. But after that, the wide receiver room's wide open, man. You know, there's nobody that's proved... There's nobody that's proved anything in the wide receiver room outside of Mike Hartley. So if we did get a guy like Keyshawn Smith or Michael Redding to step up and really cement that, you know, themselves into that starting role, that third wide receiver role, you just can't talk enough about how much that would help our team.
Yeah, I'd say that whether it's Toast and I show or questions that the media ask the players and coaches, I'd say a majority of the talking points, when we're not talking about Tyler Van Dyke or Jake Garcia, it's directed towards the wide receivers because of how up and down they were last year and ultimately down as a group. You had Mike Hartley, but, you know, Dee Wiggins and Mark Pope just didn't step up again. Yesterday on 560 QAM, Manny Diaz said that expect the younger wide receivers, the second-year guys, to contribute a lot more. That's Keyshawn Smith. That's Michael Redding III, Xavier Restrepo, Daz Worsham. Brad, do you buy that? Do you think that we will see an increase in those younger guys?
Absolutely, Marsh. I mean, to go piggyback off of both of y'all as well, you got to think, us having a full offseason now, it's just going to be able to help with the offensive play calling and the type of pace that Rhett Lashley is trying to implement in this offense. I think what you saw last year, not having that full offseason, between the players, you know, not being very familiar with the new playbook that Rhett Lashley was bringing in and just not being, you know, maybe up to the standards of conditioned-wise, what you should be as a Miami Hurricane, it kind of fell more on the seniority, right, that we kind of saw as fans that what led to what type of players were on the football field. But when you look at this season, I mean, every single player, every single coach, whether it be on the offense, on the defense, everyone has been on the same page saying that you need to seize every opportunity possible because every position is open this year. And you got to also think we are 12 deep at wide receiver, right? So between the pace that we're going to be trying to run now with Rhett Lashley, having another year under his system, a full offseason, we're going to have no choice but to rotate these guys, and they have to be ready. So, I mean, I think everybody, for the most part, kind of knows who's going to be, you know, those top three, top five guys. Yeah. But I think it's going to be those bullpen reserve guys that are going to make a huge difference and could kind of take this thing to a whole nother level. You know, the Xavier Restrepos, the D. Wiggins, the Mark Popes, those are going to be the guys that are going to step up because, I mean, as we all have seen, I mean, it's impossible to not know who Keyshawn Smith is right now. I mean, he is making a lot of headwaves. I know a couple of us have got to see a couple clips from practice the other day. He made a very nice, you know, catch in the air that I don't think half our players would have done a year ago. And it's going to be great because between what Rhett Lashley and Tyler Van Dyke talked about, you know, watching film of Patrick Mahomes, understanding that you don't really need to have that deep play every time. You can go with the check down. Between that and Keyshawn Smith going out of his way and kind of saying, hey, some of the guys that I'm looking up to is the Stephon Diggs, the Julio Jones. Well, what do those guys do well at is creating space and being able to, you know, go that extra yard, even if they're only catching a 2-yard pass. They're able to make that 2-yard pass go into a 12 to 15 yard play. And I think that's something that Keyshawn is wanting to bring and elevate to his next level, because right now I think people just know him as that deep threat guy. But I think once he brings that other asset of his game, he could become that triple threat guy we need.
Well, I thought it was funny when Tyler Van Dyke, he was talking about on Tuesday when he brought up the Patrick Mahomes and, you know, Jared Goff and those kind of offenses and how so many people think they're predicated just on the deep ball. But, you know, it's a lot of quick passing concepts. And even today, Keyshawn Smith was talking and he was like, yeah, you know, I'm just. He just flat out said it. Yeah, I'm faster than most people. Like, I'm a deep ball guy. So I thought that was funny. But, I mean, on Tuesday, Manny singled out Keyshawn as one of the guys that's really been sticking out. He also talked about Avante Williams, who we've all heard is going balls to the wall right now. Is there any other position group? But besides wide receiver and – maybe position. What's a position group on defense, Jordan? That I know we've talked about this before spring ball started, but what's the position group on defense that you're looking forward to see?
Man, there's a few different directions I could take that. I know Brad touched on linebackers a little bit earlier, but that's where I'm going to go back to. And the reason why is I just don't know what to do with that group, man. I mean, they're a giant question mark right now. You know, we really only had one. I mean, in my mind, there was only one linebacker that I came out of last year like feeling good about, and that was Corey Flagg. But he is so young that it might even be too early to expect a lot from him. I certainly expect him to be one of the starters. But, you know, like, you can't place the success of your defense on the shoulders of a true sophomore, right? So I'm very interested to see how that plays out. I would really, you know, at spring ball, all you can really hope for is for people to cement, you know, their place as a starter, right? Is to have guys really take control of their spot in the depth chart and just give the whole team confidence moving forward. That's really all we can ask for right now, because, you know, it's hard to think of how this stuff is going to translate into game day, you know, come fall. But, like, if we can walk out of spring and everyone's just like, yeah, Bradley Jennings had a great spring, you know, or whoever, right? But I'll just use him. So, you know, we can say Bradley Jennings had a great spring. He really has all of us confident that he's going to have that second starting spot next to Corey Flagg. That's all you can really ask for. And so I'd really like to see somebody emerge out of spring camp as the favorite to be, you know, starting next to Corey Flagg. That's all I really want out of that position.
Brad, who do you think is going to start next to Flagg?
Yeah, I think it's going to be either between Sam Brooks and Tyreek Austin Cave. Me personally, I'm a huge Cave fan. I think he has all the physical tools to be, you know, a day one draft pick, hopefully in 3 years. But, you know, he's got to show it on the football field. He hasn't been able to play much, but he's been putting in a lot of work in the offseason from what I've heard. Same thing with Corey Flagg. If there's one linebacker on this team that we should all feel pretty confident in, I think it's definitely Corey Flagg. I think the only down thing with Corey last year was just being able to stay on the field long enough, you know, between his foot injury that he was dealing with and just the conditioning and endurance that he was having to go through. It just wasn't able to add up to where he was being able to stay on the field as long. But when he was on the field, he was, I mean, by far the best linebacker we had as a true freshman, which is saying something. And what goes beyond that is what type of work and what you kind of do off the field when no one's looking. And what Corey Flagg did was he went and against his weaknesses, right? I talked about the endurance in his footwork. So what did he do all offseason? He did nothing but boxing drills. That has nothing to do but just footwork and endurance. And that's exactly what he's doing. He's already got the physical stature. He's cutting down body fat, as you can see. I mean, he's starting to, you know, somewhat fill out to be that linebacker that we need. And Tyreek Austin Cave, man, he looks like a baby Denzel Perryman. I'm very interested to see how he looks. But me in particular, man, you talk about the defense, Marsh, and I got to go with the cornerbacks. I think everyone knows that Tyreek Stevenson is going to lock up one of those spots. You've heard from coaches, players on both sides of the field the past couple of days and practice, the leadership and just the football IQ that he brings to the table. Just him being from Georgia and a high-talented recruit, being able to be in a locker room like Georgia has, he's able to learn from other different guys and have that different mindset that we just need in that room especially. But I think that second spot is what's going to be very important. And, you know, I think DJ Ivecalf, not DJ Ivy, because if you've been looking at the pictures, this guy looks like DJ Metcalf. Not DJ Ivy, DJ Ivecalf, because this man is huge. He is easily can be one of the biggest guys as a cornerback in the NFL right now.
Okay, let me ask a question. Why does everyone on the Hurricanes gain muscle except for Pope and Wiggins? Everyone gets jacked in the offseason. Did you see Michael Redding? The dude looks huge, but Pope and Wiggins haven't gained a pound.
I'll say this. I'll give a little credit to Pope. I think Pope actually did. He looks like he put a little bit of mass. Not much. Not saying like 10 pounds, but I'll give him a good 5 to 7. He looks like he's been doing a little bit less selfies, a little bit more arm curls, so I'm proud of that. But, you know, I think Wiggins, you know, with the seasoning of the mangoes, you know, for my guy Rambo, I think he's got to put in a lot more work, man. He's one of those guys between Wiggins, Jeremiah Payton, and Daz Worsham. Those are going to be the three receivers to me that you're going to have to look for to see how much work they put in, because those are three guys that if they don't put in that work, there's too many other guys in that wide receiver room that could overtake that spot.
Oh, Jordan, you have anything to add about our favorite players, Pope and Wiggins?
No, I mean, I was wondering what they're putting on those mangoes, man, after, you know, watching how big our players bulk up.
Vinegar and lemon pepper.
Yeah, I'm
that
sure.
That sounds awful. Wait, so hold on. Let me ask you quickly, just really quickly about the linebacker. Are you guys out on Sam Brooks?
No, not at all. I think Sam Brooks has what it takes.
I've always really liked Sam Brooks, and I think a lot of us thought that last year was going to be the season where he developed into a consistent starter on defense. But, you know, with no spring ball and everything, that was hard for a lot of players to do that. is 20 because he's a junior. He's a junior this year, correct?
Sam Brooks. No, so he's a sophomore. Everybody got a freshman.
That's right. Okay, so is 2021 the season where we finally see the Sam Brooks that we've been waiting to see? Jordan, what's your answer?
I have no expectations for Sam Brooks because I thought he was like not good for pretty much the entire year last year. So I'm not out on him. You know, I'm not going to like send him to an island in isolation. However, I'm not going to expect anything big out of him until he proves it.
That's fair. That's fair. What about you, Brad?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping for the best, but I think we're in a weird spot as Hurricane fans that we're not really used to. I mean, typically when a lot of seniors come back to a football program, those are like your elite guys to where they're just obviously the game changer guys. And then obviously your true freshmen are barely, you know, squeaking in the depth chart, where with us, it's a little bit different. Most of the guys that came back, they had to come back because they still have a lot to prove in order to up their draft stock. You know, a Cam Harris, a Bubba Bolden, you know, getting transfers like DeAndre Johnson and Tyreek Stevenson, who still need to up their draft stock. A Mike Harley, who comes back for another senior year, who obviously wants to up his draft stock. A Will Mallory, who I mean, obviously is our number one tight end after Brevin Jordan leaves, but he still has a lot to do in order to be, you know, a future tight end in the NFL. So I think the good thing is we have a lot of upperclassmen who still have a lot to prove, but now we actually are creating quality competition behind those guys to where if they're not able to do it, we have guys behind them that could push them and kind of succeed the expectations that maybe we thought those guys could have.
I know that Manny and we talk about competition, everything like that. And I'm not trying to rain down on the parade, but I feel like every spring we hear, yeah, the energy, it's like it's back in the building and everything like that. And I do believe that things, I feel like at the end of last year, it finally hit Manny that he needs to, you know, change a little bit more when it comes down to the culture of the program. Mm-hmm. I know that he's saying this about the young wide receivers, things like that, but I like if Pope and Wiggins struggle early on, or if, because I don't think Wiggins will start, I think Rambo starts in front of him, but I do think Pope starts. How short is the leash for Mark Pope? And what can he afford to like screw up until he's yanked out?
I mean, I personally don't even think he starts.
Really? I haven't heard anything about Wiggins or Pope so far. It's kind of crazy.
I think the leash is going to be pretty small. You know, some of the things that have been coming out, like especially the report that, you know, Manny was willing to use up to 5 scholarships counting for next year. I think that alone should tell us the way that the coaching staff and the administration are viewing this season. Like that just has an urgency for win now, in my opinion. And for sure. I don't know, man. I know a lot of people are excited, and I don't want to say that people are wrong to be excited. But for me, I don't see a lot of the problems that we had last year improving themselves. I do think you can see, you know, we'll probably see a little bit of improvement when it comes to execution on offense. I think that is just natural with having Rhett Lashley back, right? Everyone is going to be a little more comfortable on the offense. You know, I'm not quite ready to say that Manny Diaz is going to save the defense, especially because I feel like a lot of our problems last year were personnel. You know, not that the play calling or scheme were perfect either. But I think we'd be remiss in not blaming some of the players on defense last year for defensive woes. So I'm just having a hard time seeing where we're going to improve a whole lot. I think most of the improvement will be marginal. And then the fact that we lost 2 high-level defensive ends, you know, we lost our All-American kicker. You know, and our really great quarterback is coming off of major knee surgery. So hopefully, you know, that could end up not being a hindrance at all to De'Aaron King. But I'm very cautious about my excitement this year. I do think it'll be at least about as good as last year. But I'm hesitant to think that we make a leap this season.
So where I'm at with all this is why I'm not hesitant, right? So Marsh brought up the word culture and he brought up the word problem. So with Manny Diaz, we have to go back a couple years, right? In order to build this culture that Marsh is talking about, right, it takes a little bit of time. Look at the Miami Heat, what Eric Spoelstra did, you know, for 5, 6, 7 years before he added a LeBron James, a Chris Bosh. Same thing going back to a Nick Saban or a Dabo Sweeney. It wasn't until their third or fourth year to when they started having winning seasons and building that culture. With Manny Diaz, now what he's starting to do is he's starting to learn how to build that culture. If you look, the last two classes that we had strictly just in the recruiting class have been mostly local South Florida kids. Then what did Manny do? He wanted to make sure that those South Florida kids that he's recruiting also already have relationships built with the guys on our staff. So he went ahead and he kept Pop Cooney, who went from helping out with the running backs and the wide receivers to being the head of recruiting, right? A South Florida alum as well. You got Manny Diaz, who's obviously from Miami. DVD, who he keeps from Utah State, from going to Utah State, brings him up, makes him the cornerback coach, who's obviously another Miami guy. Brings in Edwin Pata, who's another Miami guy. You keep Mike Rump, who's obviously from Pompano. You keep your Cooney, and even the team chaplain for the Miami Hurricanes, I believe, went to Deerfield High. So you have all those people that are currently still on the staff that knows how to build relationships, not only with Manny Diaz, but for all these young men that you are recruiting, right? So now you have the relationships built. So now you need to go out and find the problem solvers that you are talking about, Jordan, right? So what does he go and do? He goes and gets a T-Rob, who has been a problem solver at multiple SEC programs, has already done it at multiple levels, right? He goes and gets a Jess Simpson back from the Atlanta Falcons, who was once at Miami, who has already problem solved that defensive end position that you were referring to when we lose big defensive ends. Who are those next guys to step up? Well, if you don't remember, when Jess Simpson was here a few years ago, not only was our defensive line one of the best in the country, but we were just coming off of losing two key defensive ends as well. So that's when the Joe Jackson, the Garvins started stepping up. And then you go and add a Bob Shoup, who has over 30 years of experience. So now Manny Diaz is pretty much opening his handbook to pretty much say, all right, maybe I will listen. Maybe I will open up. And I think at the end of the day, you're now having relationship builders on the staff along with problem solvers that now have the authority to kind of question Manny Diaz at certain times that I don't think we had in previous years. And that's where I'm kind of at with it.
Well, I hope you're right. Like, I'm not trying to say that you're not. All I'm saying is, like, you know, I would be much happier if your point of view is correct at the end of the day, you know, because I think we all just want the Canes to win, right? So
I think a lot of people are just so many Canes fans are just at the prove it stage.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people are over the offseason hype, and I say that I am, but once spring practice gets going and or if we get a commitment, I get excited. I can't help myself, but I will say that there is part of me that is maybe holding me back from saying, yeah, we can win 9 games. We can go 10-2. We can beat UNC this year. And I just got to see it, man. I do want to ask you really quickly about the offensive line. So I was writing an article for State of the U. I want to ask you guys this. Heading into 2021, would you say that the Canes offensive line is a strength or still somewhat of a weakness? Brad, you go first.
Oh, I'm definitely going strength on this. I mean, for one, you bring back every single offensive lineman that was starting last year, along with all the role players from last year. So depth, for one, is already there. Then you're adding more quality young men in that 2021 recruiting class that we just added, you know, a Ryan Rodriguez, a Lawrence Seymour, a Michael McLaughlin. So now you're building even more foundation. You keep a fifth, 6-year senior in Jared Williams. You now got Isaiah Walker, who's potentially going to be a role player. You still have guys on the team who still have a lot to prove. You know, a DJ Scaife, who once, you know, at one point looked pretty well. Another one in Navon Donaldson, who has all the size in the world to be that prototypical guard. And then you got a Zion Nelson, who is, I mean, who probably made the biggest leap out of any offensive lineman as a Miami Hurricane from a freshman to a sophomore. I mean, you're talking about a young man who was probably the worst offensive lineman in the country as a freshman, and now he's already getting, you know, first-round projections going into the NFL after this year. So I think between all the guys that we have, you know, the a solid five rotation and having at least 3 to 4 solid guys behind them that could play multiple positions, and you got a guy in Coach Justice who is an awesome guy off the field and an even better coach on the field, I think it makes recipe for success. I mean, you bring back everyone. There's no way it could get worse, in my opinion.
So let me ask you this, or Jordan, I'll let you answer first.
Okay, yeah. So I think it's going to be somewhere in the middle. I think we'll see considerable improvement. You know, it's never a bad thing when you have all of your guys returning, right? Because like a lot of our offensive linemen have been young, so. You know, more time in the weight room, more time getting conditioned, more time learning. You know, I am high on both Coach Justice and Coach Lashley, which are only going to be things that contribute to a better offensive line. I'm hesitant to be very excited about them just yet, because I think the offensive line wasn't as good as, you know, as we expected last year. I mean, in sacks given up, we were 93rd in the country, in sacks per game. And so, you know, we need to do better than last year. You know, I do think we'll be better. But it's how much better, right? Are we going to finish in the 60s? That would be a huge improvement still, but that doesn't necessarily equate to having a good offensive line. That would make us about average if we were in the 60s. So, I'm hoping that we can go a little bit higher than that, you know, hopefully in the 40s or 50s range when it comes to how many sacks we're giving up. You know, and Derek King should have helped that problem, and it really only did a little bit. So, you know, it's a really great thing that we're bringing back all these guys. I'm not sure I'm ready to call it a strength yet because it's been really bad the last 2 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, so I was writing this up last night, and I mean, any improvement from 2019 would be considered a big improvement. But we were still, yeah, like, I think it was 12th in the ACC when it came to pass protection and then 10th in run blocking. Nelson and Jared Williams, I'm very confident in at both yeah. attack. And I'm also confident in the center. My question and some of my concerns are at the guard position, which was probably the weakest position on the offensive line last year. So you have DJ Scaife, who has been rotated all around the offensive line. You have Ja'Kai Clark, who's, you know, some people say he fits better at center. But you also have a second-year guy, Jalen Rivers. And then you also have Navon Donaldson coming back from injury. Brad, do you think that Jalen Rivers could potentially take Scaife's starting job at, I think it's right guard?
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah, from left to right, I actually got Zion Nelson. Jalen Rivers, I thought the same thing, Marsh. I thought that would be on the right side and Donaldson would be on the left. But from today's interviews, it looks like that Ja'Kai Clark and Jalen Rivers have actually been working at the left guard next to Zion Nelson. So it looks like Donaldson or Scaife would be playing the right guard.
Okay. If you had to make a bet right now, would you say Rivers is starting week one?
Yeah, I do. I got some confidence in that guy.
Okay. Yeah, well, I know you're a big Ja'Kai Clark fan, too. What are your thoughts on him moving forward? Do you think he should wait until Gaynor is gone and then he can be the center?
You know, I really don't know. I think this is another just good topic to bring about. You know, I think we can all agree that the tackle spot and the center spot is kind of on lock. And now it just goes back to that guard play. And the fact that we're able to talk and mention, you know, 4 to 5 different names in that guard spot that could potentially be starting is kind of a good thing. You know, I'm a good friend of Ja'Kai, so I would hope that he starts. But at the end of the day, I want what's best for the Miami Hurricanes. So if that means Jalen Rivers and Donaldson is what's going to make us win more football games, then they need to start. But I think the fact that we're able to have this discussion and be able to say, hey, maybe this guy might be better than the other, instead of, you know, just naming, you know, the Algamos and the Salante Hillarys, you know, just names with the back of their jerseys. Now we actually have quality players.
You know, I'm excited about the offensive line. I think that there, I mean, Jared Williams, he's here for his seventh year. That has to count for something. And Zion Nelson, those two together probably make up the best tackle duo in the ACC. If the guards can improve, this offense can do so much better. Because, I mean, there were times last year, like against Virginia Tech, against, I don't know, like UNC or I mean, even Clemson, where we could not move their front four, like running the football. So
I think Jared Williams, I mean,
I'm confident in them, but it's just that we'll wait and see.
Jared Williams was one of those offensive linemen last year that kind of stuck out, in my opinion, and it wasn't a good thing. I think he was probably one of the worst offensive linemen on our team last year, and being a transfer, being a senior at that, we had a lot of expectations for him, and I didn't think he panned out as well as expected. I know a lot of it had to do with a hand injury also, but it just seemed like he was getting beat a lot as well. So, I mean, he's got to step up for sure. I mean, I think we all think that he's got that tackle spot locked up, but I wouldn't be surprised if Campbell gives him a run for his money as well.
Okay. What about, do you think Isaiah Walker gets meaningful snaps this year?
You know, I think that's still another guy that potentially could benefit him, you know, just being another year in the program, especially under Coach Feely. I know it took him a while to kind of get his body right and get the top proper nutrition, you know, and, you know, meal plan for him to kind of gain the right type of weight and also put on the right type of muscle. He seems more like one of those guys that could potentially help to, you know, be within the program another year before he kind of blossoms. But he's one of those guys, man, where if he gets his hands inside of you, you're not moving.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man. Like, if you're returning as the 93rd ranked unit in college football, like, there shouldn't be any – there shouldn't be – like, you can't say that all five spots are locked up, you know. So I think the opportunity is there for any young guys. And I agree with you on your analysis of them, Brad. But, like – I would love to see some of these young guys step up.
It's crazy because, like, I look at those offensive line rankings, and I know that we definitely struggled, but I didn't feel like we were, like, that bad. I don't know. Did you guys feel the same? Like, when I saw the number, I was like, what the hell? 94th?
I think we all got kind of thrown off the scent at the UAB game, like how well we were running the ball. And, you know, I think De'Aaron King kind of made up for a lot of that, but – pass protection was really shaky early in the season still, you know, like I think we started run blocking really well at the beginning of the year. Pass blocking was not that great. And then by the end of the year, there just wasn't a lot of good line play, you know, besides Zion Nelson, in my opinion. You know, Navon had a great game against Duke. I'm excited to watch him more, but, you know, I don't know. I'm with you, though, but I think we're probably all excited that it just got better from the Dan Enos year, because that was about as bad as you can get, you know? So how bad does it really seem when there's improvement, you know? And Bears fans aren't even going to notice that Andy Dalton really sucks this year.
Oh, God. Do you, before we get into some recruiting, is there anything else that you guys are looking forward to the next few days at spring for spring practice? When do you know when they're releasing the first depth chart?
No, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't release a depth chart till spring that spring game.
Okay, all right.
Brad, I got a question for you, Brad. Do you think Jay Garcia ends up as QB2 by the spring game?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised. I think Tyler Van Dyke has a lot of physical attributes that he brings to the table. But what I like about Jake Garcia is we keep mentioning the word competition, and that's gonna hinder on a lot of these young men for spring practice. And if there's one guy I know who is not afraid of competition, And when he is under the pressure, when he's under the lights, that's when he's at his best. It's Jake Garcia. And I think he just has that charisma, that it factor. I think that's one of the things that you kind of see that is missing in Tyler Van Dyke. He's not very vocal, you know. He kind of just leads by example on the field, but he's very quiet. And I think the Miami Hurricanes need that it factor at quarterback, you know, with Derek King having that it factor, the charisma and kind of the leadership he brings. I think you can see the same attributes in Jake Garcia. And from what Manny Diaz has said, man, he's been throwing a really nice ball, even though he's been limited in practice.
Yeah. I'm surprised that you say that, because everyone is so – and nothing against, like, TVD. I'm not going to say – because everyone thinks I'm just some Jake homer, but – I love both those guys. I'm a huge fan of Jake. And when Tyler committed, you know, in the class of 2020, I was huge on him. I've always been a fan of TVD. And I think with those two, our QB room is in a really, really good spot heading into the future. So I was thinking about this today. Do you think it's a big deal that Tyler isn't as vocal or maybe as charismatic as Jake, Brad? Or Jordan?
You know, that's a tricky question, in my opinion. Because at the end of the day, it's all about putting the ball where it belongs. And, you know, if he's able to do that, if he's able to win games as our quarterback, then it's not going to notice. You know, he's going to be like the, you know, you can spin being quiet any way you want, right?
I got a perfect comparison to TVD that I would say, like, his peak level, what I expect him to be. Daniel Jones.
Okay.
Daniel Jones, I mean, same type of, you know, big body guys can throw the football, is a game manager. And Daniel Jones isn't, you know, that type of leader. He's a very quiet guy. But you know that he's the leader of the team, because not only he's the quarterback, but he's, you know, pretty much running that offense. He's got the QB knowledge to pretty much take a football team wherever you want, especially what he did at Duke with the talent he had around him. And I think, you know, the attributes he brings running the ball too with his size is something you could see in TVD.
I like that comparison. They're both kind of game managers, I feel like. If you had to make a comparison for Jake, who would you say?
Ooh. It's hard to not say, you know, I hope he's obviously better than him, like a Baker Mayfield type of guy, you know, he has that swagger to him, that cockiness to him, but then, like, he can do a little bit of everything. I don't think he's as mobile as Baker, so maybe not him, just more of just a football type of player. He has that Baker Mayfield in him, but actual player-wise, I don't know. That's more of a trickier question, in my opinion, than the TVD one. I wonder if Jordan might have a better guy while I'm thinking on that.
No, I mean, I haven't seen, you know, it'll be interesting to see what his game looks like in college, you know. But I get where you're going at with just, like, being the ultimate competitor, right? Like, at the end of the day, that's where Jake is going to make his nut, is by, you know, just having that drive to be the best out there. And in high school, I think he proved that he could do it anywhere in the whole country, so.
Now, I wouldn't say this in the NFL, because this is, you know, pretty big, but I would say between the two schools that he was at in college, I could say Russell Wilson, you know, the type of mentality he brings to the football field and kind of putting the team on his back, being able to do a little bit of everything. I could see somebody like Russell Wilson.
Okay. Well, I mean, I was thinking about it today. I mean, it's completely fine that Tyler isn't this flashy guy. You know, he's kind of a humble and quiet guy. Not every quarterback needs to be flashy, but every quarterback needs to be a leader. And Jake and Tyler are both leaders. And that's the most important thing, is that, like, I mean, Jake's from California. Tyler's from Connecticut, you know?
Yeah.
They're both two different guys. And so that's completely fine that they are themselves and they bring what they bring to the table. It's going to be interesting to see how Jake does this spring, because there's not a lot of expectations on him. He's just trying to get his foot in the door and, you know, get adjusted to college. But I don't know. He has the it, man. So does Tyler, but they're two different its, if that makes sense.
And I think
they're what pushes Jake factors, but they're just different for each player.
And what pushes Jake the most is you talk about expectations, and I think he actually has the highest expectations on himself more than any of the players or the coaches. And I think that's what kind of drives Jake to that next level that most players don't really aren't able to see or get to because they just don't have that inner drive, you know, those inner goals that kind of push them to that next stage that Jake has. It's something that, you know, you can't just get given to. It's something that you're born with.
I love it. I love it. That means you're a winner. And we have no room for losers here at the University of goddamn Miami.
The last two classes we've recruited, I mean, this is a good segue to go into recruiting, but the last two classes we recruited, it's nothing but winners, man, whether it's in South Florida or in Texas. All these guys have won in the high school level, so they're bought into winning.
I mean, we couldn't have asked for, like, two better quarterbacks for the last two classes. God bless.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, so recruiting news. Ja'Kari Brown is coming to Miami this weekend, not for an official visit or an unofficial visit. He's coming on his own dime. And then Isaiah Bond is coming as well, correct?
Yes, sir. They'll be in, I believe, Thursday or Friday night. From what I heard, he's going to be meeting, like, you know, with some actually Miami officials, not like the University of Miami.
Like city officials.
The city of Miami, yeah. His dad has some good rapport with people down there, and then I think they'll be hitting the Miami Florida State baseball game that night, and then look at the campus on Saturday. But should be interesting. You know, all the hype's been on Ja'Kari for a couple months now. Seems like all the tea leaves are there that he'll be our first commit in this class because as we know, the only two commits that were in this class both kind of decommitted. So we're back to square one. And it kind of seems like Ja'Kari Brown, like we all thought, anybody that's been following recruiting, he's going to be the domino that kind of creates everything.
So would you say Brandon Cleveland is decommitted as well?
Yeah, as of right now, from what I heard, and actually not even just football. I've heard he's interested in baseball just as much as football.
Really? Huh. That is interesting. So we really have no commits. Is that – Are you starting to get a little worried?
Not so much, only because, in my opinion, if you've been following recruiting this year, it's a little bit weird and different in South Florida recruiting. Most of the time, the elite, type skilled players, at this point, we've already locked up, two to five of them, got our quarterback in the class, got at least two dynamic receivers, a running back. Well, most of these skilled players aren't in South Florida right now. We're having to dip our hand into Georgia, Texas, North Carolina, some of the other, states. And I think what you're seeing is a lot of these guys that we're going after, they're still, playing the waiting game. They're waiting to see when we can go, on official visits. And I think that's between the official visits and the passing of the national likeness bill for the state of Florida, those two things are going to be the domino effect for some of these bigger names. Traquan Figgins in particular, from everything I heard, if that bill gets passed, we're in very good hands to land a young man in Figgins. And then it potentially gets us his younger brother, who's an eighth grade phenom right now for the Miami Immortals.
Okay, so Isaiah Bond, I think we all kind of feel confident about Ja'Kari Brown and where his recruitment stands. Isaiah Bond was looking like he was following, along with Brown and seemed to be almost a Miami lock, but recent offers from Georgia and Alabama have maybe, changed that course. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, the Georgia and Bama offer was definitely a little scary. I think what that is, you don't really know how committable those offers are right now on the table for those two schools. Let's say even if Isaiah fell in love with one of the schools immediately after they offered, even if he wanted to commit on the spot, I'm pretty sure they're kind of, treating him similar to what Florida's doing with a couple of these guys. And what's actually burned Florida for quite some time is kind of putting some of these recruits that would want to commit on the spot on hold to try and get other guys higher on their board. And I think Isaiah Bond is one example for specifically at Alabama, where, you know, don't get me wrong, I think Alabama sees him as top talent, but there's other hired guys on Alabama's board right now that they're wanting to go after. And I think timing is everything. And with Ja'Kari Brown, you know, obviously wanting to commit very soon, Isaiah Bond has made it public that he wants to commit very soon. They're both making the trip down here. And from everything I've heard, man, behind the scenes, Ja'Kari Brown has a lot more pull than people think in the state of Georgia, not only just in the city and the county of where he's at in Lowndes, but there's a lot of other big names that Miami fans might not think we have a chance at, specifically in Georgia, that I know we have very good possibility, and linebacker being one of those big positions. So it's going to be fun to watch.
Would his last name be Pope by chance?
No, it wouldn't be Pope, but I do like Pope.
He's a baller, dude.
Yeah, he is a baller. You know, you turn on his film, and he gives you those Braxton Berrios vibes, especially on the offense. But, you know, I actually got to talk to Likens about him, and he's strictly safety. He wants to be a safety on the next level. So I'm just not sure if that's going to be our guy. I know between Jordan Allen and another striker and Travius Lathan, it seems like those are our two main strikers that we're going after right now.
Okay, well, okay, all right. So I want to ask you about linebackers. I have recently I knew who he was, but I didn't really dive deep into his film. Omar Graham Jr. from Broward.
Yes, what are your thoughts
on him? I am a huge, huge fan of him.
You'll have to go. You'll have to turn on our show from last night. We actually had Omar on for about 30 minutes right before we had Don Chaney Sr., who's now the head coach at Belen. But yeah, we had Omar on last night. Very, very bright young man. He has a 4.2 GPA, so he takes schoolwork just as hard as he does in the football field. His dad, from anybody that follows social media, his dad is just as big as a Miami Hurricane fan as all of us, and he is in Omar's ear every single day telling him that the orange and green is definitely the best pick for him. And obviously there's some other SEC schools in play. But yeah, man, we're in a very good spot for Omar. Between John Packey, DVD, and T-Rob building a great relationship with him, that kid has all the ability, you know, his football IQ, his twitch ability, and he's working a lot in zone and man coverage right now, because obviously his asset right now is playing that ball on the run. So he's working on the pass game.
Well, dude, I was going to say, like, watching his film, like, you could just tell he's so aware of what the what the offense is going to do. Like, whether it's a pass, a blitz situation, or, you know, a middle screen to the right, you know, sweep. He, like, reacts, and his closing speed, man, is ridiculous. Like, and he thumps people. I think he is really underrated at a 3-star, and he's starting to, like, the offers are starting to come in, like, more and more, right?
Yeah, they are. I believe UCF recently offered him, a couple other schools. He is in the process of narrowing it down. I do want to say he was about to narrow it down to a top three, but when we talked to him last night, it seems like, because of what you just mentioned, with a lot more of these offers piling in, it looks like he's going to take a step back and drop a top five instead of a top three and go from there. But Miami, from what I've talked to him from him and heard from other people, we're at the top of the list right now.
Is how serious is he about Florida State?
Oh yeah, Florida State is definitely on the radar for sure. That's definitely another school for him.
Okay, all right, yeah. Because I read that it could end up, or initially it was looking like it was a Miami FSU battle when he was going to commit in April. But all right. Jordan, do you have any recruiting questions?
No, sir. Haven't gotten into it yet.
I'm trying to ease into it, because, like, honestly, like, I say this all the time. Last year was really the first full recruiting cycle that I, like, really followed, like, in depth. And bro, it's tiring, especially when you have to write these stupid ass articles and you have to think of new things to say about these 100 different recruits who all play the same position. Right. Like, yeah, he has great length. Sure.
the most tiring part is like hearing some of the stuff behind the scenes, like between the, you know, the parents and these players and some of the other schools that are offering, and what kind of things that they're saying to these young men, and what the parents think about all of it. Like it's crazy. It's nuts, but I mean, it's recruiting. That's how it's going to be. You're talking about, you know, 17, 18 year old kids trying to figure out where they're going to spend the next 3 or 4 years to kind of, you know, uplift them to that next level in life. So, you know, you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, you know, once these young men decide where they want to go and, you know, move on to the next one.
Yeah.
So you're not worried about this recruiting class?
No, not right now. I think, like I said, I think some of the bigger names are outside the state of Florida. I think one name in particular, Kamari Rogers. That is the name to watch right now. I know the cornerback position is obviously a big position that we've been missing and lacking in recruiting. But between Kamari Rogers and Jacoby Spells, if we end up landing both of those guys, those are going to be the top two corners that we've landed, you know, dating back to Tracy Howard. And that will improve our cornerback room tremendously as far as depth moving forward.
Okay. All right. I like it. Jordan, anything before we wrap this up?
No, man, I'm good. I think we've covered a lot today.
Yeah, it's good to just talk ball with the boys, Brad. It's been too long.
Yeah,
I know, man. We gotta get together. You know, maybe for spring game, we'll chill at your mom's house and drink some beer like we did before, man. I'm down.
Yeah, we sure did that. We definitely did that. Okay. Well, if that's everything, Brad, thank you so much for coming on, man. I think we're just going to sign off now.
I appreciate you guys as well. And actually, I want to give a shout out to one of your sponsors, man, Stickers by AB. Make sure you guys hit up him and make sure you get that Luka to the U sticker. As you guys know, all proceeds go to leukemia and to the lymphoma. You know, I want to, you know, shout out everybody in the Canes fan base, all the coaches, players that kind of went behind Luka and kind of, you know, started this thing. And hope all for the best for him and the Raskin family.
For sure. Bro, that has been honestly one of the, like, most amazing things I've seen. Like, just seeing all the Canes fans come together and try to, you know, help him any way you can, man. It's such a sad situation, but it's amazing to see how people respond.
And if fans didn't think the hashtag thing worked before, well, they got another thing coming. Jake Garcia was one point, and now Luka's another. So I think we're doing all right with that hashtag.
Yeah, Manny said it during the press conference.
Yeah, it was. That was an eventful, you know, 24, 48 hours. It was pretty crazy.
I love it. Yeah, go check out AB. And when are we coming back, Jordan? You have a date?
I don't know. Sometime next week.
We'll figure it out. Okay. Well, until then, thank you again, Brad, for coming on. Good shit, as always. And go Canes.
Go Canes.
Go Canes.
This has been the Forza Podcast. Remember to like and leave a comment to help our podcast grow. Follow me on Twitter at Hurricanes.